Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Pastor Eli James here. This is the Restoration Hour. Not sure if I'm broadcasting on Revolution Radio. My computer was acting up this morning, so I had to shut down and do a system restore. Everything seems to be working again. We'll see. And I'm going to continue the series that I've been doing on the Civil War. This will be another part on the preamble or the prerequisite activities of the British. And last week I talked about the British ending to slavery, the act they created in 1833, and how it was a deliberate ploy to send agents to America, and provoke a civil war. They sent agents to the North to provoke the abolitionist movement, and they sent agents to the South to provoke the pro-slavery movement. And, okay, I understand we're on the air, at least here on Eurofolk Radio, and I'm going to see very quickly if I can connect to Revolution Radio. So give me 1 second, folks. We'll see if this will connect. And don't want to have dead air there either. And it seems to be working. Praise Yahweh. So I had to do a system restore, but I also now need to connect the audio here to make sure that I'm hearing anybody on the other end of Revolution Radio. So I think we're there. So I'm going to continue now with the continuation of the story of the British plot, the British aristocratic plot to disunify the North and the South by sending agents. And this plot actually began probably around 1812 when we defeated the British in the War of 1812. They did not stop in their provocations against America because, as I explained last week, the entire aristocracy of Europe, including the Roman Catholic Church, were afraid that the American experiment in republican form of government was going to catch on in Europe and overthrow the aristocracy. And as a matter of fact, the Roman Catholic Church actually supported the South during the Civil War, openly supported the South. And slavery, Catholics take note, the Roman Catholic Church supported slavery, still does today, because they support socialism. They support the transfer of wealth from the wealthy to the poor, which is socialism, which is communism. And the Jesuits have openly supported communism wherever they have operated since the 1960s. So we see that the forces for slavery are still at work today, and they have no intention of letting up their pressure in destroying this revolutionary republican form of government. And that's why we're seeing the attacks on our institutions by the international Jews, by the international communists and socialists, and all the imperialistic forces around the world, such as the Catholic Church, such as the Rothschilds, such as the warmongers. All of these forces want to destroy the American experiment in popular government, republican form of government. And they have conscripted the press, the mass media. Interestingly, folks, the left continually holds up signs to destroy capitalism. Capitalism must go. Yet the capitalist press firmly supports all of this anti-West, anti-Christian, anti-white activity. And these are capitalists. Are these leftists, these Antifa and feminists, are they blind? Don't they see that the capitalist press, which is, of course, owned by Jews, supports them to the letter in all their causes, promoting feminism, promoting homosexuality, maintaining a deep, dark silence about the drug culture that the left has started. That and by the way, on Eurofolk Radio yesterday, I posted a link to sex and the Soviet Union. How, and feminists take note, that one of the first things the communist experiment did in Russia was to nationalize women. What does that mean, nationalization of women? It means that any commissar or anybody who applied could pick any woman he wanted in the Soviet Union and have sex with her, and she could not object. Yes, this occurred in the Soviet Union. So all of you pro-communist liberals, all of you feminists who think communism is a good idea, all of you followers of Gloria Steinem and all of the Jew whores that have been promoting feminism since the 1960s, they know these things, but they fail to tell you because you are the bait. You are the bait. You are the liberals, as Lenin said. You are the useful idiots who are necessary to create disruption in the society so that full-on communism would be the result. So the same type of agitation that occurred before the American Civil War is still going on today by the same party, by the way, the Democratic Party, and its pro-communist leaders such as Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and all the rest of them. It is in fact fascism, because all of these pro-communist liberal politicians are in lockstep with the global Zionist occupation government. They're complete fascists. Remember, John D. Rockefeller said, competition is a sin. So you have this vast left-wing conspiracy, and all of the tax-exempt corporations founded by the Rockefellers, such as the Ford Foundation, you name it. All of these gigantic tax-exempt corporations all promote communism, all promote feminism and homosexuality. So all you liberal left loonies who are out there waving signs, bring capitalism down, the capitalists are the ones financing you. George Soros, another one, is financing the commies. Black Lives Matter, Antifa, feminism, the rape culture. Oh, by the way, yeah, the porn industry is run by capitalists, capitalist Jews. Liberalism has always supported the porn industry. So when are you lefties going to wake up and realize that you are being manipulated? Utterly manipulated. And your purpose is to destabilize America, just as both the abolitionists and the pro-slavery agitators agitated for disunion in 1860. The intention of these international Bolshevik communist bankers is to dissolve the Union. It's left versus right. And the Democratic Party still supports slavery as it did in 1860, because communism is slavery. This is why the feminists are so hypocritical on the subject of rape. They're happy to blame a white guy if he rapes a woman, although 1 out of 1,000 rapes are committed by a white guy. The vast majority are black on white rapes or Muslim on white rapes, as you can see in Europe. Yet, the feminists support Islam. They denounce Islamophobia. Islamophobia is reporting the facts that the vast majority of rapes in Europe are committed by Islam, by non-whites. Selective outrage by these hypocrites, absolute hypocrites. All right, let's get back to our subject. I've been quoting from a booklet This is published by the Cornell University Library Digital Collections. It is entitled The Present Attempt to Dissolve the American Union, A British Aristocratic Plot by Samuel Finley Morse. And I'll pick up where I left off last time because this is extremely important, where the booklet quotes a Mr. Leggett who had a conversation with a British general who was stationed in Mexico City. His name is Aaron Leggett. And he had a conversation with Deputy Commissary General Wilson of the British Army in Mexico City. And I forgot what year this is. Let me see if I can find the exact date of this meeting. Okay, 1853. In the fall of 1853, Mr. Leggett had this conversation with General Wilson of the British Army. And Mr. Leggett was praising the British government for declaring an end to slavery by their act of 1833. And by the way, as you if you heard last week's show, the slave owners of Britain were very generously compensated for the loss of their slaves. So in other words, the British aristocracy bought themselves off. The British government paid them for their slaves so that they wouldn't lose money on the deal. And then from that moment forward, from 1833 forward, the British government could posture as being a moral force on the question of slavery and abolitionism. Because they couldn't do that if they were still owning slaves themselves. Now they could scale a full-on assault against the American institution of slavery in the North, while at the same time supporting the South. Remember, the South was trading cotton with the British before and after the Act of 1833. The South didn't miss a beat. Neither did the British Empire. Didn't miss a beat. They kept on trading with each other. So the South was not affected at all by the Emancipation of 1833. This hypocrisy on the part of the British Empire should be evident to everyone. So Mr. Leggett says to Mr. Wilson, General Wilson, this emancipation of the slaves by the British Empire is such a wonderful thing, Mr. Leggett says. And Mr. Wilson replies, the cool heads in England, said Mr. Wilson, do not think that it will be beneficial in its effects on the interests of the people either in its colonies or in the mother country. Now you have to ask yourself, well, if it's not going to be beneficial to the colonies that they still owned where slavery was rampant, or in the mother country, then why did they do it? And Mr. Leggett could only say, well, it's because they're such compassionate and wonderful people. They finally had a moral tinge. They finally had, oh, slavery is wrong. We need to do away with it. This is the assumption that Mr. Leggett is working on. Mr. Wilson continues, no, I do not think so. This is not from a moral compunction or the desire to do right by anybody. He says, quote, we think that the freed Negroes will do very little work. That was a very prescient statement. And that the West India colonies, as to their commercial value to the mother country, will be ruined. So why would the British Empire make such an economically disastrous move if there were not some ulterior motive? And so let me turn to page 11. I did quote this last week, but it's so important it needs to be repeated. Well, Mr. Leggett, said Mr. Wilson, General Wilson, you may believe that this is a compassionate move on the part of the British government, but I do not. I believe that the action of the British government is made to promote, as far as possible, the interests of the English aristocracy. How could the English aristocracy possibly gain anything from this abolition of slavery? Mr. L. then asks, what interest of the English aristocracy will be promoted by the ruin of the British West India Islands? Mr. Wilson said that the abolition of slavery in the British colonies would naturally create an enthusiastic anti-slavery sentiment in England and America. Now, because now it would be permitted, the government would have no compunction about allowing abolitionist sentiments to be publicly proclaimed in England. This is what the Rothschilds wanted, as a matter of fact. Why? Because they hoped to gain the dissolution of the American Union and take over the commercial interests of both North and South upon the ruins of the American country. So whatever they might lose temporarily from letting go of the British West Indies, they would gain by eliminating the threat of the American Republic, and they would totally control the economy of North and South. Let me start this sentence over, reading it to conclusion. Mr. Wilson said that the abolition of slavery in the British colonies would naturally create an enthusiastic anti-slavery sentiment in England and America, and that in America this would, in process of time, excite a hostility between the free states and the slave states, which would end in a dissolution of the American Union and the consequent failure of the grand experiment of democratic government. He uses the word democratic. We know that democracy is the worst form of government because it can be easily manipulated by the press, the kosher press. That's why our founding fathers created a republic, which is based on local government, not on democracy, which is top-down government authoritarianism. And the ruin of democracy in America would be the perpetuation of aristocracy in England. Let me repeat this last sentence. This is how seriously the British aristocracy viewed the threat in America, the Republican threat in America. And the ruin of democracy in America would be the perpetuation of aristocracy in England. I do not undertake to give the language of Mr. Leggett, but the following paraphrase conveys in my own language the impression made upon my mind of the course of reasoning by which Mr. W. came to this conclusion. Quote, the English aristocracy have ruled England for ages. Their position is more enviable than that of any similar class in any other country on the globe. Of course, the French had gone through their revolution, which was precipitated by the Jacobins, that is, the Jewish merchant class, who precipitated the French Revolution in order to divide that country so that they could take it over, which they ultimately did after Napoleon was defeated at Waterloo. They expected to be able to control Napoleon, but that turned out not to be the case. Nevertheless, they destroyed France and instituted the Reign of Terror. It was definitely the Jacobins behind us, the secret societies, the B'nai B'rith, the Freemasons, and the Alliance Universelle Israel, that is the Jewish secret society, which became B'nai B'rith here in America. So we see all of these Jews working behind the scenes, pulling the strings, getting the Duke d'Orléans in debt so they could manipulate him. They did the same to Mirabeau and many other former aristocrats in France who had ambitions of gaining power once the Republic, which they assumed would be a nonviolent republic. But they were wrong because they didn't realize how they were being manipulated by the Jew banksters. So, the British aristocracy, of course, led by the House of Rothschild and the Bank of England, planned to do the same thing to America and use slavery as the incitement on both sides to cause the Civil War. They could probably not foresee how serious the Civil War would become, 600,000 lives lost on the battlefield, families ruined. But I want you to understand who is really to blame for the American Civil War. Abraham Lincoln held out to the very last minute before the South shelled Fort Sumter that the South would be accepting the proposition of compensated emancipation of slaves and adopting of a free labor system, with the condition also that the blacks be sent back to Africa or elsewhere. But the South adamantly refused to accept that proposition, because the agitators in the South and in the North, especially the Northeast, not so much in the middle North, were disunionists. And even the abolitionists in the North were also disunionists. They criticized the United States of America and wanted the dissolution of the Union. This fact is rarely presented anywhere, that many of the Eastern abolitionists were also disunionists. The booklet continues. The English aristocracy are the wealthiest and most powerful on the globe. They rule the wealthiest empire in the world. Their landed estates embrace a large portion of all the lands in the kingdom, and these estates are entailed in their families. The House of Lords is composed exclusively of the aristocracy, and they have such influence in the elections that the members of the House of Commons are to a great extent the near relatives of the lords. Okay. Oh, you guess what? A swamp. The British Parliament at this stage of the game was nothing but a swamp of traitors beholden to the British aristocracy, which was beholden and controlled and manipulated by the Bank of England, just as in America, Congress is controlled by the Federal Reserve Bank. And anybody who objects finds his life can be made very miserable or ended by these thugs, by these banker thugs. And these House of Commons are to a great extent the near relatives of the lords. No nepotism whatsoever. Offices of honor and power and sinecure offices with large incomes in the church, the army, the navy, the colonies, at foreign courts, and in all the departments of home government are in their gift and can be bestowed at their pleasure upon their relatives and friends. Patronage system, anybody? They have inherited these privileges from their ancestors, and their great aim, their ruling desire, is to retain them in their families and to transmit them to their posterity. This is their motivation. And fomenting a civil war in America, they had concluded, was the best way to preserve this power. Recently, however, this belief has been seriously shaken by the success of democratic institutions in America. Englishmen are getting now to be well acquainted with America, and they see there a people of the same race with themselves, of course, their Anglo-Saxon race, speaking the same language, reading the same books, holding the same religious opinions, loving the same pursuits, in short, like themselves in every respect except that they have no aristocracy. You see how America represented a threat to European, not just British, but all of European aristocracy? That system had to go because it was exploiting the poor people. It's total exploitation of the poor, of the serfs. Actually, the most liberal government, in the true sense of the word liberal, meaning change of oppressive tactics or oppressive actions, was Russia, where the Russian czars had been liberating the serfs and making them landed farmers, just like America. In fact, the czars were motivated. They saw what was happening in America, and they wanted to improve the lot of their serfs. So they were making the serfs, who were subjects of the feudal lords, into landed farmers, independent, grow your own food. And the excess can be sold on the market, which is capitalism, folks. Capitalism, in the true sense of the word, free enterprise, not banker's capitalism, which obtains today. And this is another reason why the Jews hated Russia, because they were actually dethroning the aristocracy in Russia as well. So the communist revolution, or the Bolshevik coup that occurred in Russia, was an attempt to undercut the creation of free enterprise in Russia. Of course, you won't hear that in the textbooks. Same motivation there, is to destroy republicanism and institute slavery, that is, communism. So from one form of slavery, namely serfdom, to another, Russia went while they were trying to establish a free enterprise economy. You won't hear the Russian Revolution or the Bolshevik coup described in these terms, but that's the reality, because Russia was becoming a free enterprise economy. So the British aristocracy saw that the English people, and maybe the other European people, would be looking at America and saying, hey, look at how prosperous these Americans are. They have no aristocracy to hold them down. And yet, continuing with the quotation here, under their democratic institutions, and of course, we substitute the word Republican because we know that Democrat, but in their minds, America was an experiment in democracy, actually Republicanism. Americans are advancing even more rapidly than Englishmen in commerce and the arts, in the diffusion of knowledge among the people, in population, wealth, and all the elements of national greatness. So you see how the aristocracies of Europe, and of course the banking class that controlled them and is working hand in glove with them, and the Roman Catholic Church, which was cooperating with the aristocracy, still had the Holy Roman Empire fully functioning at this time. So they saw in America the greatest threat to the institution of aristocracy that ever had come down the pike. And intelligent men of the middle classes in England are beginning to think that aristocracy, with its heavy taxation for the support of sincere offices, may not be so essential as they have heretofore supposed to the prosperity of England. Indeed, not necessary at all. And if you really want prosperity, you get rid of the bureaucracy of feudalism. So what are the leftists of today proposing? Well, they substitute the bureaucracy of the aristocracy with the bureaucracy of socialism. Right back to slavery, folks. Right back to slavery, you stupid libtards, useful idiots on the left. And that the English people would perhaps make more rapid progress if they should throw off this burden by republicanizing or Americanizing their institutions. Okay, so the British aristocracy saw that sentiment in England was very much on the side of the American Republic, and they said, well, we've got to nip this thing in the bud. The great danger to the English aristocracy lies in this idea in the minds of the English people. For if it should take root and spread, it might end in a revolution in which they would lose all their privileges. Oh, no. We can't exploit the poor people anymore. we'd have to run for election. Hence, they study everything in America and in England with the deepest interest in its bearings on this matter. The English aristocracy know that the English people are a liberty-loving, a liberty-wanting people. They saw with what ease numerously signed petitions for the abolition of slavery could be obtained in districts and among classes where it was no interest to check the current of the popular feeling. They knew that they could have found no difficulty in disposing of such petitions in Parliament without granting them, for they could have continued to receive them respectfully and postpone action upon them endlessly if their interest had required it. Okay? Well, this is why the British aristocracy gave up their interest in slavery in 1833, cashed out, as it were, paid themselves off, so that they could begin posturing as an anti-slavery people, as an anti-slavery government. They had to do this in order to promote the abolitionist movement in America. So the British aristocracy didn't need to do this. As the author says, they could have rejected these pro-Republican proposals endlessly. And as Congress does here in America, stall the matter endlessly in committee, right? And take no action. They could have done this in perpetuity. But they did not, because this was a calculated design to posture as an anti-slavery government. Even so, they still did business with the slave-owning South. So the hypocrisy never ended. What will be the effect of encouraging and finally granting these petitions? So they decided to grant these petitions against slavery. If slavery shall be abolished in the British colonies by compensating slaveholders for their losses, nobody in England will then have any interest in opposing the wildest and most enthusiastic expressions of anti-slavery sentiment. So, the American abolition movement, the author is telling us, began in Britain, began in England. And they sent agents, anti-slavery agents, the aristocracy did, the House of Lords did, the Bank of England did, to America to agitate against slavery in the North. Englishmen will then love to refer with pride and boasting to the large sums sacrificed by their government with their concurrence on the altar of liberty, justice, and humanity. Well, compensating themselves for the loss of the slaves is not a matter of sacrifice, folks. That's a payoff. That's a payout. So they could posture from this point on, since 1833, they could posture as humanitarians. They will then look to America and they will see slavery still there, for Southern slaveholders in America, of course, will never ruin themselves and their country by imitating Great Britain in abolishing it. And that's exactly right, because they couldn't gain thereby. The Southern slaveholders would lose everything. Or so they thought. They rejected Lincoln's proposals of compensating for them for their slaves and operating on free white labor. They could have employed all the poor whites in the South, the so-called white trash, who were even poorer than the black slaves. But the liberals won't tell you that, and the neoconservatives won't tell you about that either. Englishmen can then be easily excited on account of American slavery to look down with scorn upon Americans and American institutions. And if any popular orator or writer in England shall propose to deprive the aristocracy of their powers and privileges, and to fortify his argument shall refer to the prosperity of America under democratic institutions, he will be met with scorn and defeated in his purpose. See, America still has slavery. We're so much better than they are. This will be the effect in England of the abolition of slavery in the British colonies. But the most important effect will be the effect in America. America is divided almost equally between free states and slave states, between states in which the Negroes are so few that no harm results from their emancipation, and states in which slavery is so deeply rooted that it cannot be safely abolished without ruin to all classes of the population. In the free states, a fierce anti-slavery sentiment, a bitter hatred of slavery and slaveholders, can be excited almost as easily as in England, and in the process of time, by constantly fanning the flame, such a hostility can be kindled between the people of the two great sections that it will lead to the destruction of the American Union. And the failure of the grand experiment of democratic government by men of the Anglo-Saxon race. Here again, my argument, which has always been that the American Civil War was precipitated by the Rothschilds, with the London Rothschilds supporting abolitionism in the North and the Paris Rothschilds supporting slavery in the South with their main agent, Judah P. Benjamin, who was actually a London Rothschilder himself. They were working both sides of the argument, fanning the flames of disunion, fanning the flames of hatred, just as Antifa and Black Lives Matter and the Democratic Party are fanning the flames against white America today. They're promoting communism, and we on the right are promoting republicanism, the U.S. Constitution. It's the same fight all over again, people. Whose side are you going to be on? If you're with the left, you're with the moneyed aristocracy, whether you realize it or not. It is easy to see that the mainstream media, the kosher press, is in lockstep with the communists. In lockstep with the communists, so is the Congress. So has been the presidency. With Trump throwing us alt-right true conservatives a bone now and then. But the battle line has been clearly defined here, folks. It's the moneyed aristocracy of America and the world, actually, because this is globalism. This is Rothschild globalism with many of the dictates that the left adores coming directly from the United Nations organization, which, by the way, is a banker's organization, the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, a Bank of International Settlements. Go on down the line. These people are authoritarians. These people are super capitalists, monopolists, and revolutionaries. Because the last thing they want is for the American experiment in Republican form of government by the Anglo-Saxon race to succeed. Do you now understand why I'm so much on fire with exposing this Jewish conspiracy against the white race? Wake up, white people. You better start waking up because they intend to kill you. And the more power they gain, the more easily they will kill you. You better be prepared to resist, because given the choice, give me liberty or give me death, I will not be a slave to the Jew banksters and their cronies on the left. Bring it on. Bring it on, lefty. Bring it on, bankster. We know who is orchestrating all of this, and when the shooting starts, we have the names of all your bankers. So you better be ready, bankers. You better be ready. Because if you start another civil war in America, and you're obviously trying to do that, and in fact it has already started. And as Mr. Morse was trying to awaken Americans in his day, because these articles started being published around 1860. I am trying to do the same thing today, is to awaken American people as to the true nature of the threat. The true nature of the threat is that this is Jewish communism, Jewish banksterism, which has always financed Jewish communism. So you better get ready. They're going to try to starve us out. They're going to try to use biological warfare against us. They've already started using directed energy weapons to burn us out. They're trying to immigrate us out of existence by flooding, according to Revelation 12, 17, flooding our Anglo-Saxon Israelite nations with a wave of immigrants to destroy our institutions, to create democratic voters all over again, because all of these immigrants vote Democratic, because the Democratic Party instituted the welfare state. Let me repeat the words of Lyndon Baines Johnson. I will make those niggers vote Democratic for the next 200 years, unquote. So, Mr. Wilson says, in short, Mr. Leggett, I believe that the English aristocracy lent their influence to the abolition of slavery in the British colonies, that they may use it as a wedge for the division of the American Union. Let me repeat this statement because this sums it up. I believe that the English aristocracy lent their influence to the abolition of slavery in the British colonies, and by compensating themselves for the potential loss, that they may use it as a wedge for the division of the American Union. They did it to promote their own interest, to perpetuate their own privileges by the destruction of the Union and the prosperity of democratic America. And to secure their object, they care no more for a debt of 20 million pounds sterling and the commercial ruin of the British West India Islands than for the ashes of that cigar you are smoking. Okay? Because they perceived a threat, and they began a policy by which to eliminate the threat. That is the Republican government of America. The author says, what struck me as particularly noteworthy in Mr. Leggett's narrative was that before the experiment of Negro emancipation in the British West Indies had been fully tried, and while the friends and supporters of the measure professed to believe that its effects would be happy upon those immediately connected with it, both in the islands and in England, an agent of the British government who must have had uncommon opportunities for forming a sound judgment in the case expresses his belief that they who controlled the action of the government knew, when they gave their sanction to the measure, that there was every reason to expect that it would be calamitous to the Negroes. So it wasn't motivated by good intentions or compassion at all. The fact of the matter is, however, that slaves in America were treated much better than slaves elsewhere. Why? Because slaves in America were the property, and because in 1808, Thomas Jefferson signed a law in which we cannot import any more slaves into America. So it was not so easily, they were not so easily replaced. And the American slave system allowed blacks to have families on their plantations, where elsewhere in the slave world, they were worked to death because they could be easily replaced. Now they could no longer be easily replaced from Africa. So the American slave system was, if you want to use the word humane in comparison, it was humane in comparison. You don't kill an expensive farm animal and have to replace it. No, you keep that expensive farm animal as healthy as possible, as contented as possible. Just like the contented cows. Just like the contented cows forget what milk company uses that expression. And even when John Brown's raid happened at Harper's Ferry, there was no slave uprising. John Brown was convinced that there would be. No, the reason why was because these slaves, for the most part, were contented. There had only been a handful of slave uprisings in the history of American slavery. And no doubt those were due to brutal slave owners. But for the most part, the slave owners were not brutal. They resorted to the lash only when necessary because they had to get the crop out. And if slaves were, what's the word, when you refuse to work or pretend that you're working and don't work, which blacks are really good at, but you see the result, that the crop isn't getting out. So then they have to enforce discipline and get the crop out. But the rest of the year, between the planting and the harvest season, there was no oppression. The slaves had their own little villages on the plantation. So you cannot compare American slavery with slavery elsewhere. Completely different. It was not as brutal as slavery around the world. So let's continue here. We see that this plot, they knew it would be calamitous to the Negroes. Look at Haiti. Haiti has been a calamity since British slavery ended. Or maybe it was French slavery there, I forget which. That there was every reason to expect that it would be calamitous to the Negroes, to the planters, and to the British people, and knew, too, that they could easily have prevented it, but they still supported and encouraged it because it would promote the interest of the English aristocracy by enabling them to excite in the free states of America such as an anti-slavery feeling as would lead to a division of the American Union and the destruction of the great democratic republic. So, Mr. Morse is onto something here. Why haven't you heard this argument in the past? It's because the Rothschilds and the liberals and the Republicans and the Democrats and the Jew-controlled press and the Jew-controlled academia do not want you to know the facts because they are agitating you people today just as they were previous to the American Civil War. They are doing their absolute best to provoke another civil war. And yes, the Democratic Party is still advocating slavery. It just has another name. It's called communism. Communism never liberated a single worker. And the fact is that the communist movement has always been supported by the super rich, the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, and others. And without the money coming from the Federal Reserve Bank, the Soviet experiment would have died on the vine for lack of funds. Congressman Louis T. McFadden exposed the activities of the Federal Reserve Bank in financially supporting the Soviet Union. And then FDR... recognized the Soviet Union under Stalin because he saw that the experiment was failing. And Stalin had his bags packed just in case the people would rise up and throw him out. He was prepared to make his quick escape. But when Roosevelt recognized the Soviet Union, i.e., allowing American businessmen to take advantage of the slave laborer in the Soviet Union, Stalin got new life. The communist experiment needed money from the West, and the West provided it through the conspirators like FDR, the Federal Reserve Bank, and the Jewish conspirators in the State Department etc., etc., etc. Let's continue with this fine booklet, which, by the way, is available online. Let me repeat the title. The author is Samuel Morse. The booklet is entitled The Present Attempt to Dissolve the American Union. There are free copies of this online. Page 15. A constant attendance at the meetings of religious and philanthropic societies, and especially of anti-slavery meetings, during a residence of 4 years in London, thoroughly satisfied me that the anti-slavery meetings and excitement that are got up in England, not for the purpose of a removal or an amelioration of the evils of slavery in any part of the world, but chiefly, if not exclusively, with a view to keep up in the hearts of the English people a hatred of the people and institutions of America. With the view of sending many of these orators in England to America to agitate against slavery here. So since Britain had gotten rid of its slave problem, why agitate against slavery? All of this agitation was aimed at America, folks. All of it was aimed at America. The author continues, and as to our own country, all who are acquainted with the history of the anti-slavery movement here know that prior to the abolition of slavery in the British colonies, the American anti-slavery sentiment was eminently kind, considered, rational, and Christian. It wasn't radical like it was in Britain. All the radicalism began in England, and it was financed by the aristocracy. Yes, the American Colonization Society was created to free the slaves and send them back to Africa. Liberia was the nation that they created. They bought and were sending blacks back to Africa after their manumission. But the South, upon getting support from the Paris Rothschilds, totally abandoned any sympathy for the American Colonization Society and began a series of pro-slavery rhetoric, finding orators who justified slavery on quote-unquote biblical principles, and the agitation, the pro-slavery agitation in the South became just as radical as the anti-slavery agitation in the North. He continues about the kind, considerate, rational, and Christian nature of the abolitionist movement in the North before this imported agitation from England, that it had already happily effected the gradual abolition of slavery in all the northern states and was at the time very active in the border slave states, especially among the slaveholders, who, after individually emancipating scores of thousands of their own slaves, united with each other in anti-slavery societies to promote the gradual but eventual total abolition of slavery by law in their respective states. So this successful abolition movement based on conservative and Christian principles had to be destroyed, had to be nipped in the bud. Otherwise, the Union could not be dissolved. And they had fair prospects of success in Delaware, Maryland, Virginia, Kentucky, and Missouri, and with some hope even in North Carolina and Tennessee. The emancipation of the slaves in most of these states to go hand in hand with their removal to other lands. This is the exact position that Abraham Lincoln maintained through his entire political career. And yet he was demonized in the South as a nigger lover and as a black Republican. This is demagogy. This is demagogy, folks. Lying about your political opponents, accusing them of having false intentions when he had never deviated at any time in his political career, up into and including when he finally took office. He was still telling the South, "We will compensate you for your loss of slaves. By the way, the South will maintain its white racial status." But no, the slaveocracy said, "No, we have to have our slaves." And I had told you already that more mulattoes existed in the state of Virginia than in the entire North. Here is again the hypocritical rhetoric coming from the slave masters who said, "Abraham Lincoln wants us to marry black people." No, he never said that. But he also said that it's you Southerners, you're the ones that have the problem with mulattoes. You're the ones that have the race mixing problem, not us. Why are you perpetuating a system which guarantees race mixing, you hypocrites? Now you see my contempt for these neo-Confederates who are still blaming Lincoln for the problems of the South and actually denying that slavery was the real issue. I wonder about their loyalty to the Union as well. Let me repeat this last statement because it is totally important that Lincoln was simply voicing the opinion of these border states and the North upon the gradual emancipation of the slaves and the shipping them off to other countries. So, states like Delaware, Maryland, Virginia, Kentucky, and Missouri, and with some hope even in North Carolina and Tennessee, the emancipation of the slaves in most of these states to go hand in hand with their removal to other lands. This was clearly stated in the Republican platform of 1860. That we want to stop the spread of slavery into the new territories. We don't intend to stop it in the slave states because we have no right to interfere in the internal affairs of any state. Their platform specifically stated this because they appreciated and understood the rights of the southern slave states because it was constitutionally guaranteed. However, their using of filibustering, that is imperialist tactics, to spread slavery to points west, south, and in some cases north, such as Kansas and Nebraska, were seen as highly provocative by even the most rational anti-slavery people in the North. Now, where did all of this agitation come from? Folks, it came from the Rothschilds. There's no doubt about it. So this would go hand in hand with their removal to other lands. This is the Republican Party's position under Abraham Lincoln. And no Southerner could deny it. Yet they kept on calling Lincoln a nigger lover and a race mixer. It is also well known that immediately after the abolition of slavery in the British colonies, anti-slavery societies of a totally different character were formed in New England, and that these societies were based on the principles of bitter hatred to all slaveholders and a fierce denunciation of the measures which had been framed with great consideration and wisdom by Southern slaveholders for the welfare of their slaves and for the elevation of the Negro race. They were obviously a hunter-gatherer society, and they still are even in Africa. They will never be able to raise themselves up any higher. They don't have the mental capacity to do it. Yet we see the left and the Jews constantly promoting race mixing. Again, it's the Democratic Party that's promoting race mixing. and inflaming Negro hatred against the white race, and feminists and communists blaming the white patriarchy for all of the evils in the world, when in fact it's the Rothschilds and their minions. All wars are bankers' wars, folks. All revolutions are funded by Jewish bankers and Jewish communists. Get that straight. It's not the white patriarchy that's evil. It's the Jews and their pro-communist allies. All wars are bankers' wars, and all revolutions are bankers' revolutions. It is known that the supporters of these New England anti-slavery societies established newspapers and issued tracts, employed lecturers, and devised plans evidently intended to irritate Southern men and provoke to acts which would irritate the Northern men and provoke retaliatory acts, and thus by continued angry action and reaction ripen a hostility between the North and the South, which would naturally end in a dissolution of the American Union. This system of hostility has been kept up for now for 25 years, and with what effect? Let the present state of the country answer. Dear listener, I've been trying to tell you that the Jews are doing exactly the same thing to America today that they did to America up to and including the American Civil War. And if you don't think they fully intend to carry out their plans to destroy America, you are sadly mistaken. How much of the large amount of money expended by American abolitionists in support of this organized system of hostility to the Constitution of the United States? Remember, I've been telling you that the Northern abolitionists, the radical abolitionists, were disunionists. The left-wing press never admits that. Has been contributed in England. How much of it has been contributed in it, we know not, but we do know that while conservative Americans have often been publicly and wantonly insulted in England in connection with the slavery question, and without apology where apology was due, from members of the aristocracy, other Americans, whose chief aim to notice was the zeal and success with which they had attacked a fundamental law of their country and promoted bitter strife between the people of its two great sections, have been invited to the homes of English nobility, flattered, honored, and encouraged on their return to America to renew their warfare upon the people and institutions of the South. So, we see that Northern abolitionists were invited to England, feted by British aristocrats, and provided with funds to come back to America and agitate even harder against the South. These facts are readily explained on the theory of Deputy Commissioner General Wilson, that the aim of the English aristocracy is to perpetuate their own power and privileges by destroying the great American Democratic Republic, and they cannot, we think, be satisfactorily explained by any other theory. So we see that there was this suspicion on the part of Americans in the press, and there were others. The Chicago Tribune actually issued the same warning, that the British were agitating for disunion and accusing them of conspiracy. Nevertheless, this fact that there were such suspicions against the British Empire rarely finds its way into any history books. Next section in this wonderful booklet is the dissolution of the Union the consummation of a well-devised British plot. Messrs. Editors, this is for the Journal of Commerce. No date given at the top, but apparently it's related to the date of December 15th, 1860. So This is very early on in the course of hostilities of the Civil War. Messrs. Editors, many think so. Many think that this plot to destroy the Union emanates from Great Britain. And there is more evidence of the truth of an affirmative answer to this pregnant question than superficial observers are probably aware. If calm, sober-thinking men, North and South, would but carefully consider whether or not they have been the dupes of a subtle foreign intrigue, it would seem that a great change in their reciprocal feelings might be the result. Okay, let's fast forward to today. We see that the Jew press, the Jew communists, the Jew feminists, the Jew leftists, the Jew fags, all these people are agitating against the white patriarchy, fiercely, and not just agitating, but they're killing people. They're smashing up buildings, they're burning cars, they're sucker-punching white people. Do you think that these tactics are going to lead to a calm, rational discourse? No, the left refuses to allow us to speak. Just look at Charlottesville, what happened there, which was all a conspiracy by the city of Charlottesville, controlled by Democrats, Black Lives Matter, and Antifa working together. Here we see again the communist capitalist conspiracy against the West, against the white patriarchy, against the Republic of America. It's happening all over again. I'm trying to wake you up. There is evidence, if they will but search for it and well weigh it, to make every very palpable how gradually and artfully these designs have for years been in progress till the end aimed at is at length accomplished. Okay, so it really began with the Jew Ike the Kike, and the Supreme Court Justice, that Jew Rabbi Earl Warren, when they forcibly attacked the southern states with bayonets on the end of rifles and forcibly integrated the schools in the South. That began the American Civil War, Part 2. Now it's very clear that this is all Jewish. Forget the British Empire. The Jews control the British Empire. They have since 1694, when the Bank of England was created. And we know for a fact that these Jews in Congress are the ones agitating for non-white immigration into America, thus precipitating the race wars we see happening today. If you cannot smell the intrigue and subversion and treason that the Jewish community is instigating against white America, then you are simply blind. Last week, we had 100 Jews arrested in the Capitol Rotunda who were advocating for non-white immigration into America. So this goes from the top Jews at the Federal Reserve Bank to the little Jews, the Sionim, the Jewish traitors that live in America but are loyal to only Judaism and not to the American Republic. The traitors, all of them. From the top dog Zionist to the little commie agitators, it's all Jewish. And the feminists, all Jewish. And Antifa, all Jewish. Led by Jews. And by the way, Gloria Steinem, one of the top dog Jewish feminists, admitted to working for the CIA as early as 1955. The CIA set up her magazine, Ms. Magazine, The CIA helped her finance the National Organization for Women. The CIA has always been controlled by Jews, by the Rockefellers, by the Rothschilds. The CIA is an outgrowth of the OSS, the Office of Strategic Services, set up by FDR, who was a part Jew and certainly a Jew sympathizer. So was LBJ. So we've had a succession of half-breed Jews such as FDR and full Jews such as Harry Truman, Ike the Kike, and also the Bush family has Jewish roots as well. So we see the Jews are not letting up in their agitation against the American Republic. Absolutely not. They never will stop this agitation. So you better get ready to fight. Do not let them. By the way, I haven't noticed any. There haven't been any attempts to instigate violence with guns. It looks to me that they've actually given up on trying to get rid of the Second Amendment. And of course, this is all of a Jewish agitation against the Second Amendment. Dianne Feinstein and all these Jewish Congress critters are the ones behind getting rid of the Second Amendment. Of course, Hillary Clinton is their creature. So was Barack Obama. And they failed. Because you have to have an amendment to the Constitution to get rid of the Second Amendment. And if they try that, they will expose themselves as the enemies of America and incur the wrath of the American gun owner and the militia, the real militia, not the military that we have, which is totally controlled by Zionists. Folks, do you not see that there is another civil war brewing? It has actually already begun. And you better prepare yourself for the worst. Because it's here. It's not coming. It's here. So they have given up on trying to eliminate the Second Amendment, and they're going to use other tactics to dissolve the American Republic. Most of them related to high technology. And I've been warning people not to go for the 5G cell phones. These will just cause your brain to be cooked. Reject 5G. In fact, all the cell phone producers deliberately slowed down the activity of their cell phone apparatus in order to promote the myth that the old cell phones don't work so well anymore and that you have to go to 5G to get fast service. Get 5G and cook your brain. Like I said, they're going to use other tactics to destroy America. The dumbing down of the American school children in order to make blacks appear equal to whites has been in operation since Johnson's Great Society. The family institution has been utterly destroyed. Black people are poorer today than ever. And the hatred in the black community for white America has been inflamed in the same way that North and South were agitated just before the American Civil War. It's the same thing all over again. And make no mistake, the Democratic Party is the party of slavery. Even today. So, Mr. Morse is telling us that this agitation, pro and con, regarding slavery is a deliberate tactic imported to America by the British aristocracy. His booklet doesn't talk about the British bankers. He appears not to know anything about the finances behind the British aristocracy, the British Empire. Benjamin Disraeli, the first Jewish prime minister of Britain, was known as the father of British imperialism, advancing the cause of Zionism. using the British military against India, South Africa, and China, and everywhere else. So just as the British Empire was used by the Jewish banksters to create their global hegemony through using the Bank of England, the Jews have done the same thing in America using the Federal Reserve Bank. He continues, many of your readers will have doubtless, and again this is for the Journal of Commerce, many of your readers will have doubtless perused an article in Harper's Weekly of December 15, 1860, written by Mr. Sidney Morse, Esquire, late editor of The Observer, giving some singular facts. Now, whether he means late that Mr. Morse died or is just no longer the editor of The Observer. Nevertheless, the author of this booklet continues, giving some singular facts on this very subject, which drew forth a disparaging article in the Tribune, pronouncing the revelations there made a hoax. Okay, just as today, the Jews are constantly minimizing us as conspiracy theorists, using the tactic of name-calling and ad hominem attacks to silence us, as they did to the good white nationalists gathered in Charlottesville, Virginia. They're still using the same tactics. And the left once believed in freedom of speech. Not anymore, folks. Not anymore. In that article, Mr. Morse gives under his own name a statement of a conversation in Paris with a gentleman, the late Aaron Leggett, Esquire. So the author of the booklet is simply recapitulating what I have read to you about that encounter between Leggett and General Wilson. Well known in this community, not long since deceased. Okay, so Mr. Leggett has died. I don't know about Mr. Morse. His sentences contain so many subclauses, it's hard to know what the subject is. So either Mr. Morse or Mr. Leggett has died. A gentleman of great benevolence of heart, but like most of his creed of the Society of Friends, carried away in his views on slavery by a mistaken philanthropy. Mr. Leggett gives clearly and consistently to Mr. Morse the conversations he had held with a distinguished British official in Mexico, Deputy Commissary General Wilson, a gentleman who from his position would not be likely to misrepresent the opinions of his principals, nor would Mr. Leggett, who was an enthusiast on the subject of abolishing slavery, be likely to misstate to Mr. Morse the uttered sentiments of a British officer, whose revelations naturally aroused in his own patriotism an antagonism to his cherished philanthropic design and brought them in conflict with each other. So, since both Mr. Leggett and Mr. Morse were sympathetic to the abolitionist movement, once they found out about the true designs behind it, they began to have their doubts. There are, in the circumstances of the case, therefore, nothing which can create a suspicion of dishonesty in any of the parties concerned. But on the contrary, everything which entitles their statements to be received as true. If doubt be raised in the minds of any, the cause is not in the statement of Mr. Morse, nor in the statement of Mr. Leggett. It must rest solely on the statement of General Wilson, and the probabilities of the truth of his views and reasoning will receive confirmation or refutation from other sources. So let's talk about it. Let's investigate the matter. No, there's no such thing as conspiracy. That's what the left, the commies on the left, the socialists on the left, the feminists on the left, the gay rights movement, etc., etc., all of whom are nothing but pawns in the game of Jewish empire, and their allies in the capitalist mass media, who have done everything in their power to prevent Trump from being elected, and they engage in a conspiracy, creating an actual secret society, Mr. Strzok and his mistress, I forget her name. And it has been recently revealed that Mr. Strzok and others on the radical left mainstream media, that's right, the radical left mainstream media owned by Jews, by international Zionists, who are in lockstep with the Zionist occupation government, who are oppressing the Palestinian people, which their ridiculous news organizations refuse to cover, among many other subjects they refuse to cover, promoting the ridiculous theory that Trump and Russia were conspiring against Hillary Clinton when exactly the opposite was the case. These people exchanged emails talking about assassinating Trump. Just as the pro-slavery people in the South wanted to assassinate Lincoln even before he was elected. Folks, do you see the similarities happening between modern America and America just before the Civil War? Do you see the similarities? Are you beginning to get it? Are you starting to listen to me? So the only person who really could be called into question in terms of motivation was the general himself. But why would somebody like this admit that there was a design, a plan behind the liberation of the slaves by Britain in 1833? Why would he admit to such a thing? Why would he even say such a thing? Very controversial. The author continues, whether the fierce and reckless sectional strife that has been kept up for 25 years throughout our land is the natural result of our own professed progress in enlightenment, or has been fanned and fed by foreign intrigues for the deep political ends, is surely a question that should not lightly be treated. It certainly concerns us to know whether or not we are at this moment the victims of a deeply laid foreign scheme. It was Jewish then, and it's Jewish now, for the quenching of a light which, however unconsciously to ourselves, is revealing to the European people, as we have believed, the unsound parts of their governmental systems, namely the system of feudalism and the aristocrats who were parasitizing off the people of Europe for their own personal gain and for the continuation of their rule. Yes, the peasants of Europe had a legitimate gripe against the aristocracy because they had become totally corrupt and self-serving and exploitative. With the help of the Jewish banksters, are indeed the revelations of Commissary General Wilson so chimerical? Have there been no other indications that the British government has not merely indirectly fed the slavery agitation in this country, but has George Soros, anybody? Paying Black Lives Matter and Antifa to agitate? Hello? But has zealously, persistently, and directly encouraged it in every possible way? Need we more than allude to the mission of a member of Parliament who, as an abolition lecturer, filled the country for a season with excitement and strengthened, if he did not initiate, the wicked system of crimination and abuse of our southern brethren? Were there no indications of foreign complicity in the John Brown raid? I have told you about the Secret Six. Garrett Smith being the ringmaster, the ringleader. They financed John Brown's raid. Now, why would they do such a thing, if not to fan the flames of hatred between North and South? And Gerrit Smith, after the Civil War was over, agitated for the release of Jefferson Davis. Why would such a radical, the guy who financed John Brown's raid, suddenly turn around and say, oh, we need Jefferson Davis should be released, when he was doing nothing but fanning the flames of hatred against the South until the war was over? Why? Because he was a member of the secret society working for the British. And so was Jefferson Davis and his handler, Judah P. Benjamin. They were blood brothers. Who was Colonel Forbes? What did the Stafford House Junto mean in their ovations to Mrs. Beecher Stowe? All this agitation against slavery in the North was financed by British imperialism. Was there no political object in this movement and in the subscriptions raised to operate against slavery in this country? Why is America on this subject to this hour insulted in the persons of any of her citizens who visit England in all circles under the influence of the aristocratic clique in Britain? So an American tourist going to Britain was subject to being insulted by the anti-slavers in Britain. Why the marked favor shown in the same circles to the most violent and unprincipled abolitionists who visit them from this side of the water? Okay, so the abolitionists were being coddled in Great Britain and financed from there. And I've already explained to you how the communists came to America for the same reason. And the Freemasons, the Illuminati, Karl Marx. Lemmy and many other Illuminists came to America to agitate for slavery in the South and against slavery in the North. There is a political purpose at the bottom of all this, and General Wilson does not stand alone in revealing what it is. We have come into possession of an article from the highest source published in London sometime since, which very distinctly states that the political object which is to be obtained by the British government through the persistent agitation of the slavery question in Great Britain and in the United States, and as it is directly confirmatory from an independent source of General Wilson's revelations, we will copy it, premising that it will be remembered that a lady traveler from Britain holding one of the highest positions in Queen's household, the Honorable Amelia Murray, lady-in-waiting to Her Majesty, visited the United States in the year 1854. Traveling extensively at the South as well as the North, she examined the condition of African slavery at the South, and on her return to England, she published her letters, in which she honestly gives her convictions that American slavery had been wholly misconceived and misunderstood by the Stafford House Junto, since from her own experience in the United States, she was persuaded that the actual status of slavery there had been grossly misrepresented as being as bad as slavery elsewhere. But I've been telling you repeatedly that African slaves lived better lives than Africans in Africa. And this is apparently what her report was. It doesn't say exactly what her position was. Much excitement was created at court by Miss Murray's letters, and she was at once dismissed from her position near the Queen for stating that American slavery was not as bad as British slavery had ever been. This act on the part of the Queen's advisors created a feeling of indignation in certain quarters, and Miss Murray had many sympathizers as one persecuted for honest opinion's sake and for telling the truth. This state of feeling made it necessary to give some explanation to the public, and the following article was published in the London Athenaeum of January 26th, 1856, at page 107, bearing intrinsic evidence of its emanation from a source near the throne.
They've all been ruined by the banks. Open your eyes, the banks have lied to you.
Next time,
you know, my favorite president was
the witching hour. And apparently I still do not have connection with Revolution Radio, so I'm not sure if they're playing the bumper music or not. So I'm going to disconnect, and hopefully things will go better next week. Thank you very much for listening. Praise Yahweh, pass the ammunition. And yes, apparently they were playing the bumper music, but I wasn't hearing it. These ongoing problems with connecting with Revolution Radio are getting to be annoying. Okay, we'll see if we can solve the problem. All right, and so I will just go ahead and play bumper music of my own. And praise Yahweh, pass the ammunition. The truth is finally beginning to come out about the true nature of the American Civil War and who precipitated it. And the lies about the American Civil War are still progressing as heavily as ever. As heavily as ever. So I pray that we have a resolution to this conflict, because they're trying to do it again. And folks, you better realize that they're trying to do the same thing here in America. Thanks for listening. Praise Yahweh, pass the ammunition. See you next time. Rats. Media player won't play the file. Okay, so I'll have to see if I can come up with something else.
Turn to you.